Well, Acts chapter 21 for our text this morning, beginning at verse 8. And the next day, we that were of Paul's company departed, and we came to Caesarea, and we entered into the house of Philip the evangelist, which was one of the seven, and we abode with him. Now, the same man had four daughters, virgins, which did prophesy. And as we tarried there many days, there came down from Judea a certain prophet named Agabus. When he was come unto us, he took Paul's girdle, or belt, and bound his own hands and feet, and said, Thus saith the Holy Ghost, So shall the Jews at Jerusalem bind the man that owneth this girdle, and shall deliver him into the hand of the Gentiles. And when we heard these things, both we and they of that place, besought him, Paul, not to go to Jerusalem. Then Paul answered, What mean ye to weep and to break my heart? For I am ready not to be bound only, but also to die at Jerusalem for the name of the Lord Jesus. And when he would not be persuaded, we ceased, saying, The will of the Lord be done. And after those days, we took up our carriages, or baggage, literally, and went to Jerusalem. Can I call your attention once more to verse 14 and 15? And when he would not be persuaded, we ceased, saying, The will of the Lord be done. And after those days, we took up our carriages and went to Jerusalem. Recently, my oldest son, Peter John, got his driver's license, which produces a certain amount of parental anxiety. If you have sons or daughters that age, you know what I'm talking about. But really, it's sort of dumb for me to be worried about Peter John driving his 1982 Subaru Galaxy, 126,000 miles on the car. It's really sort of dumb for me to worry about that when you compare it to what's going on at this time, not only for him, but for all of us. What do you mean? Right now, as we sit in this place, on these pews, we are moving at tremendous speed. Right now, the earth is spinning on its axis, 1,000 miles per hour, twice as fast as my Volkswagen can go. 1,000 miles per hour, we're spinning. And while the earth is spinning 1,000 miles per hour on its axis, it is moving 67,000 miles per hour around the sun. At the same time, while it's spinning 67,000 miles an hour around the sun is moving across our galaxy at 64,000 miles per hour. So here we are, spinning 1,000 miles, moving at 67,000 miles, while the sun itself is moving across 64,000 miles. And the sun is moving in an orbit within the galaxy, not just across at 64,000, but orbiting within the galaxy at 385,000 miles per hour. And the galaxy, as we are sitting here right now, is moving across the universe at 1,350,000 miles per hour, and it's one of the slowest moving galaxies that we know about. So, if you feel a bit dizzy this morning, there's reason for it. Now, we're spinning, we're moving, the sun is rapidly crossing, and the galaxy itself is rushing hurriedly through the cosmos, through the universe. And here's the tricky thing. Our galaxy, which is moving at that speed, 1,350,000 miles per hour, that's a lot of miles in a single hour, is only one of millions of galaxies that are moving at even greater rates of speed. Now, when you really think about this, this incredible speed that is taking place right now, and the galaxies moving at unimaginable velocities in all different directions, you are setting up the ultimate collision, the ultimate destruction derby. But we don't worry about that. Nobody got up this morning and said, my goodness, the galaxy is moving at 1,350,000 miles per hour through this universe, and there's millions of galaxies moving at least that speed, and what's going to keep it from collapsing, from colliding? What's going to keep it from a huge cosmic destruction derby? We don't even think such thoughts. If you're a believer, you know what the scriptures declare, and that is this, that your Father, that God, spans the universe in the palm of his hand. Between his thumb and his little finger, he's got the whole gig under control. And you're in good hands. Not with Allstate, necessarily, but you're in good hands with the Almighty of eternity. He's controlling it all. And we don't worry. We don't think about the speed in which the galaxies are moving and the potential devastation of two galaxies colliding. Hey, doesn't cross our minds. But here's the interesting thing. I don't give a thought about the galaxy moving at 1.3 million miles per hour, but Peter John driving his Galaxy Subaru. My goodness, I get uptight and worried about that. He's going 40 miles per hour. Maybe. Why? What's the deal? And I've discovered something interesting about my fallen nature. I don't worry about the planet on which I live as it relates to outer space. I don't worry about the world on which I live. But I'm constantly vulnerable to worrying about the world in which I live as it relates to my personal space. My personal world, my family, my friends, my profession, my church, my country, my world, hey, that can produce within me a great deal of anxiety. I mean, I have opinions about the way my family should be, the way my country should go, the way my church should behave. I've got opinions about everything. And I'm very worried in my flesh that if my opinions are not heard and heeded, there's going to be a crash. There's going to be chaos. There's going to be confusion. There's going to be collision. So I must make sure my opinions are not only heard, but heeded in my little world in which I live. And if they're not heeded, my tendency in my uptightness is to say, okay, if you're not going to listen to my opinions to keep this world from crashing, if you're not going to take my advice to keep this world from collapsing, then quite frankly, I'm going to pull away. I'm going to back off. I'm going to get hurt. And that's what happens. So often in my flesh, if my opinions on things are not heeded, my flesh gets hurt and I pull away and I back off. Now, in our text, check this out. The men that were traveling with Paul had reason in their flesh to be hurt, to pull away, to back off. Why? Because they felt their world was crashing. Their world was collapsing. That they were headed for chaos and collision. You see, Paul had been ministering up in Europe and also in Asia Minor, which is today called Turkey. While he was there, he desired to go to Jerusalem that he might attend one of the festivals that was being held in that holy city. And so they began to work their way from Asia Minor south towards Jerusalem. But on the way, Acts chapter 20 tells us that in every city, the Holy Spirit would give a witness saying that problems and persecution is awaiting Paul when he gets to Jerusalem. Now in chapter 21, he arrives in this little seacoast city of Tyre, verse 3. And in verse 4, he hangs out there for a week. And while he's there, certain disciples, verse 4, said to Paul through the Spirit, "Do not go to Jerusalem." And yet Paul still moves his way south towards that city, where he comes to Caesarea, verse 8, where we started in our text today. Caesarea, that seacoast city, beautiful spot. And when he gets there, what happens? Agabus, a prophet who was well known in the early church, comes and grabs Paul's belt and binds his hands and binds his feet and says, "Whoever owns this belt is going to be bound in Jerusalem and turned over to the Gentiles." In other words, trouble is on the horizon. Now, put yourself in the sandals of these friends that were traveling with Paul. In every city, they hear this witness, these prophecies. "Paul, there's trouble awaiting you in Jerusalem." And now, one of the big boys, Agabus, a powerful prophet who had real renown, is saying the same thing. "Whoever owns this belt is going to be bound and turned over to the Gentiles." Not a good scene. And so they begin to plead with Paul, saying, "Don't go to Jerusalem." In every city, there's a warning. The Spirit is surfacing this word to you concerning Jerusalem. And now Agabus is visually demonstrating for you the problem, the trouble that will come if you go to Jerusalem. And they said, "Don't go." But Paul responded, "Why are you breaking my heart?" I love Paul. I don't care if I'm bound or even am killed in Jerusalem. I'm going. Now here's the question. Was Paul being stubborn and sinful? Those who teach about Paul in our day are divided whether Paul was in error on this point or not. There's a pretty much 50-50 division among the commentators. Some taters are more common than others. But you read the commentators and they're split on this issue. Some say, absolutely the guy was in error going to Jerusalem after all of these warnings. Others, which I'm inclined to agree with, say no. You see, back in Acts chapter 9, Paul was told when he was converted that he would suffer great things and be brought before kings. That he would go through persecution and problems and suffer great things for the name of Jesus Christ. And as Paul was now headed for Jerusalem, where he would end up eventually from there in Rome, standing before Caesar Nero as a prisoner of the empire, the Spirit was simply saying, "Paul, the time has come. Now, you can back out if you want to. But a warning was given to Paul that the time had come in which those things would be fulfilled. And perhaps giving Paul the opportunity to say, oh, Lord, I just can't go through with it. But Paul doesn't do so. He says, I don't care if they kill me. Why are you guys breaking my heart? Don't you understand this has to be? Paul, how do you stop a guy like that? Now, here's the interesting thing. What would you have done if you were in Paul's entourage and you plead with him, don't go, and yet he continues on? What would you have done? Would you have got hurt, been mad, pulled away? What did these men do? They, verse 14, saw that when he would not be persuaded, we ceased and said, the will of the Lord be done. They stopped trying to persuade him. They ceased their arguing. And they simply stated, the will of the Lord be done. Notice the next verse. And they went with him. They took up their carriages, their luggage, literally. They took the baggage of Paul's decision to go to Jerusalem. They not only went with him, but they carried the baggage that went along with that decision. And they moved out. Now, here's the issue. Think with me. Were these men, Paul's friends, were they blindly following Paul? Were they blindly following their friend? No. The point of this vignette, this story, is they were not blindly following their friend, but they were fully trusting their God. They said, hey, the will of the Lord be done. You see, they knew something. Paul had been wrong before. Do you recall the story? He thought he was protecting God's honor as he would go throughout the whole region tracking down these newfangled Christians, these heretics, these deviants from Judaism, and he would pull them out of their homes and he would put them in chains and he would carry them off to be imprisoned and tortured and killed. And he was going down the road to Damascus to get some more Christians. He was making the wrong decision, folks. And what happened? God knocked him off his feet. Put him on his face. God intervened. The Lord intervened and straightened him out. When Paul was wrong before, going down the wrong road to the wrong place, Damascus, the Lord intervened and corrected him rather radically. These guys knew that. And they just looked at this guy and said, well, Paul, we're not persuading you, are we? Then it says they ceased, saying, the will of the Lord be done, and we're going to go with you. In fact, we'll carry the baggage of your decision. What a difference, by the way, a comma can make. You see, many of us in our flesh, when our wife doesn't see it our way, or our employees or boss or teacher or coach doesn't take our advice, what a difference a comma can make. For our tendency is to remove that comma. Look at verse 14. Then when we saw he would not be persuaded, we take that next comma out. We ceased saying, the will of the Lord be done. We just stop saying God's will be done. We just start saying, well, you're asking for it. What a difference a comma can make. It says we ceased, we stopped, and then said, the will of the Lord be done. Too often I in my flesh see saying, the will of the Lord be done. What a difference a comma. I take out this comma and I go into a coma. I just say, you're dead. If that's your decision, man, You're dead. As far as I'm concerned, go ahead. But, hey, don't come crying to me. You're wrong. And I just sort of remove myself. I sort of just back off. I get hurt. I take that comma out. There was a millionaire from New York, sent his wife overseas on a trip. While she was gone, this was some years ago, John Astor was the man. When his wife was in Europe, his financial empire began to collapse. She didn't know that. And while she was there in London, she tracked down one of the most expensive pieces of jewelry in the world. It had the largest diamond in this jewelry that was known at that time. And she wired home to John Astor there in New York City. And she said about this diamond, what a buy, what a gem, what a treasure it would be. He wired back immediately. And when he heard that price of $250,000, which at that time was outrageous, he wired back to her immediately and said, no, comma, price too high, exclamation mark. Well, the cable operator took that message and forgot the comma. And so when she got the cable, it said, no price too high. And she purchased the thing, you see. He later sued the cable operator and won the case because the cable operator forgot a comma. So too in this verse. What a difference a comma can make. What would you do? What do you do? How do I act when somebody in my little world doesn't heed my advice? Do I pull away? Do I cease saying, the will of the Lord be done? You're dead. Don't come crying to me. Or do I, like these men, say, you know what? God is on the throne. He is in control. Therefore, I will go with the flow because I know that God is in control. I will go with the flow. I've let you hear my heart, and now I know that God is on the throne, and the will of the Lord be done. Now, what was the result? In this story, as it relates to these men, saying, the will of the Lord be done, where's your bags, Paul? We'll help carry the luggage, the baggage from your decision. What's the result? Notice, first of all, what happened for these men. These men traveled with Paul, and they experienced three things in the rest of the book. Number one, there was protection. They went through storms at sea, riots in the city. They had all kinds of challenges, but you know what? They were protected in it all. Even though Paul forged ahead to Jerusalem and eventually on into Rome as a prisoner of the empire, they experienced protection because they just simply said, the will of the Lord be done. Number two, provision. These men wanted to go to Rome. That was Paul's great passion. Oh, he wrote over and over again, I want to come to you that are at Rome. I want to bear fruit in Rome. He finally got to go to Rome. These men went with him. Not exactly as they planned. They were prisoners of the empire, but nonetheless, it was all expenses paid. And so here they go. There is protection. There is provision. There is promotion. Promotion? What would have happened, pray tell, had Luke at this point, Luke who is in this group, Luke who is writing this story, the author of Acts, what if Luke, that beloved physician, would have said, Paul, you're stubborn, you're bullheaded, you're not listening to our advice, go to Jerusalem. I'm staying here. Caesarea? It's a seacoast city. Beautiful place aesthetically. And Philip over here, one of the original deacons, He's got four daughters. Luke, not married at this time, may have said, you know, they're virgins, they're spiritual ladies. I'll just date one of them for a while. And Paul, you go to Jerusalem and I'll just hang out here at the beach and date one of Philip's daughters. I mean, that could have been very easy for Luke to say. You go, Paul. But that's not what Luke did. He went along carrying the baggage of that decision. And guess what happened? God used him. Luke became the author of the book of Acts, the human instrument of this wonderful book. If he didn't go, he wouldn't have been the author of this book. He wouldn't have been used in that way. I look at others who bailed out on Paul, even great men like Barnabas, who just couldn't agree with Paul concerning the situation with John Mark. You might remember the story. Barnabas went on his own way. There was a great disputation between Paul and Barney, and they just split. And what happened? Barnabas is indeed a great man, but you never hear from him again in the Scriptures. And I suggest to you that Barnabas lost out something because of demanding his own way, having to have his advice be heeded. And I wonder, how many brothers, how many sisters, they just miss out what could have been in their lives, what God could have done through their lives, had they not bailed out and said, well, if my advice isn't being heeded, if my way isn't happening, I'm pulling back, I'm getting out, I'm hurt. Sayonara. Adios. Arrivederci. I'm out of here. But that's the attitude of my flesh. We miss out. We miss out promotion and provision and protection. Because we think, I've got to have my advice heard and my advice heeded. And if it's not, I'm gone. Wives, you may not like the decisions that your husband is making. You may not like your husband. He may not be the same guy that you thought you were marrying. By the way, what's the difference between a husband and a boyfriend? 30 pounds. And you married this guy, you know, and now you can't believe that you married him. I mean, the decision he's making, he's not hearing what you're saying. He's not heeding what you're suggesting. And you think, man, I'm out of here. I've had it. You're not the same guy that I married, or you're not who I thought you were going to be. I'm gone. Sayonara. See you later. Remember Sarah, chapter 20 of Genesis? Check this out. Oh, when Abimelech, Abraham, her husband said, Abraham, the man of faith, Abraham, the friend of God, when Abimelech sees you, your beauty is so incredible, he's going to want you in his harem, and he's going to kill me to get you. By the way, Sarah was 90 years old at that time. When he sees you, he's going to want you and he's going to kill me to get to you. And sure enough, that's what came down. Abimelech heard the rumors of this woman's beauty. She was a snap eye. She was incredible. And, you know, the servants came back and said, man, you need her in your harem. She is the most beautiful woman ever. And so they sent for her. And Abraham said, so look, protect me, Sarah. Tell them when they come that I'm your brother, not your husband. Now, you think your husband, gals, kind of doesn't stand up for you. I mean, he said, this friend of God, this man of faith, he said, please tell him that we're not married. They'll take you away to his harem, but that's okay. Just don't. I mean, it's an amazing story. And so she does that. You know, he made a decision. She carries the baggage, the luggage of that decision. And what happens? She's hauled off to the harem. That night, the Lord comes to Abimelech and says, "You touch her, you're dead." Protection. You touch her, you're dead. Abimelech wakes up after having that dream and says, "Wait a minute, I didn't know this." And so he calls Abraham and says, "Why didn't you tell me? You lied to me. Why didn't you tell me that she's your wife and not your sister? I could have made a grave error. I could have been killed in the process." And then Abimelech said this, "But because your wife is so special in following a lughead like you, in standing by you, in traveling with you," it says in Genesis 20, Abimelech entreated Abraham well for Sarah's sake. He gave to Abraham men servants and maidservants and donkeys and camels. He gave to Abraham all kinds of stuff equivalent to, in our culture, hot tubs and BMWs and ocean villas. I mean, he just loads it on Abraham because of Sarah. So not only was Sarah experiencing protection, but provision, because she carried the luggage of that lughead's decision. And what else? Promotion. For you note takers, just like these men. Promotion. Sarah is held up in the New Testament as the quintessential example of a godly woman. She singularly is held up as the example of what a wife should be. Because she traveled with her husband, stood by her husband, even though at the time her husband was making a rotten decision. She had faith in God. Now, these men are saying, "Paul, we're standing with you. We're standing by you. In fact, we're going to go right alongside of you. We'll carry the baggage to Jerusalem." They were protected, they were provided for, and they were promoted. They were heroes of faith, and Luke became the author of the Acts of the Apostles. Notice also here, not just what happened for these men, because they didn't pull away and get mad and be hurt because their decision wasn't heeded or their advice wasn't taken. But secondly, notice what happened in these men. Peace. They stopped arguing and simply said, "The will of the Lord be done." It's a great day in the life of any Christian when they finally begin to understand that God is on the throne and I can give my opinion or my input, but then I can be at total rest simply saying, "Now, the will of the Lord be done." I can leave it in His hands. They had peace. They never again brought the issue up. They never again, when the storm came or the persecution was happening, they didn't say, "See, Paul, see. They just had a peace in their lives as they traveled with him and stood by him. Now, faith and worry are mutually exclusive. At any given moment, you are either going to be in a state of tranquility saying, "The will of the Lord be done. I trust Him. The one who holds the universe in the palm of His hand can work out my little situation. And if my boss or my husband or my kids or whoever it might be seem to be going off in a wrong direction, I know that God is on the throne. He has ways of dealing with them. I can just trust unequivocally, completely in Him. Faith and worry are mutually exclusive. If, though, I don't have faith saying the will of God is being done, then my stomach starts to turn, Pepto-Bismol starts to go down, ulcers start to develop, I just start to get all weirded out, uptight, sick. Because, you see, I'm worrying. I'm anxious. Instead of simply having faith, the will of the Lord is being done. He's on the throne. I can go with the flow. I can carry the baggage of that decision because the will of the Lord is being done. He's on the throne. This guy was a worrywart, worried about everything. From the moment he got out of bed and crossed the street to buy his morning paper, he feared, oh no, am I going to get hit by a car when I cross the street? When he made it across safely, oh no, is my finger going to get stuck in the newspaper machinery? I mean, all day long, perpetual anxiety. One day, this guy, who was known throughout his town as being a worrier, he's walking down the street, whistling, smiling, not a care in the world. And the townspeople said, oh, what's the deal, man? Why aren't you worrying today? Looks like you don't have a care in the world. He says, I don't. What happened? He said, well, I got sick and tired of worrying. So I hired somebody to worry for me. And he's at my house, and that's all he does. All day long, he worries for me. He just worries. Worries about everything. Really? Man, a professional worrier. Yep. How much are you paying him? $10,000 a day. How in the world are you going to pay him $10,000 a day? That's his worry. He's me. The scriptures say, be anxious for nothing. Don't be uptight. Man, just cast your care upon Him. Say, truly, the will of the Lord be... I've let you know my opinion for whatever it's worth now. The will of the Lord be done. Where's your bags? I'll help you. Not I'm mad at you. Not you'll be hearing from my lawyer in the morning. Not I'm pulling my membership out. Ah. The mature man, the wise woman, is the one who says, the will of the Lord be done. Where's the bags? I'm going with you. Now keep in mind that this debate between Paul and these friends did not deal with, please understand, did not deal with rebellion against the Lord. Paul wasn't saying, I want to rebel against the Lord. But rather, the discussion was about the direction of the Lord. This argument, this debate, was not about a violation of the Holy Scriptures. Paul wasn't saying, I want to go sell crack cocaine. And they didn't say, oh, we'll go with you. Where's the bags? It wasn't a violation of the Scriptures. It was an interpretation of the Spirit. There was a reasonable, honest debate and discussion. Please keep that in mind, because if someone says to you, if a husband, wife says to you, or a boss, worker says to you, let's do this, and you know it's sin, then I'm not saying that you say, well, the will of the Lord be done. Let's go do it. That's not the issue here. Do you understand the difference? The issue is an honest debate about a decision that dealt with interpreting the will of the Lord and the direction of the Spirit. And these guys didn't agree with Paul's conclusion, but they had trust in the Father, saying, Father, you stopped him before. You can do it again. You knocked him down before on the road to Damascus. You can knock him down on the road to Jerusalem. We'll go with him. What will happen when that becomes your mindset? We're almost done. Stay tuned. Listen carefully. What will happen if you two, like these men, say, hey, here's my opinion, and now the will of the Lord be done. Where's your bags? You too will experience what they found. Protection, even if it's a wrong decision. Provision, God will bless you. Promotion, you like Sarah will be honored for your willingness to trust in the sovereignty of God and your commitment to that person. God will do that for you. But even more importantly, what God will do in you, you will not be a worrier. You will not be hurt and pulling back and getting mad and feeling fear and all that stuff that just eats at a person will not be eating at you. With a smile on your face and a sparkle in your eye and a spring in your step, you can say, hey, I've shared my thoughts. Now the will of the Lord be done. I trust Him. I really trust God. The one who spans the universe in His hand can control this little world that I live in. The will of the Lord be done. But most importantly, here's the real key. Not just what the Lord will do for you, provision, protection, promotion. Not just what the Lord will do in you, peace. But most importantly, because of what the Lord has done for me previously. You see, I've made the wrong decision time and time again. And it's been outright rebellion. I have turned my back on what I knew was right. I have hardened my heart against the Lord. I have been one who has made the wrong decision time and time again. I'm a dumb sheep, and all we like sheep go astray. And you know what the Lord said to me? I'll never leave you, and I'll never forsake you. And He says the same thing to you. And He says it to us constantly. He doesn't say, okay, you're not heeding my advice. That's it. You're toast. You're not heeding my advice. Okay, divorce. He says, Johnny, you're not listening. You're not heeding. Okay, I'll carry the baggage. What baggage? The baggage the Lord carried for me was not a nice Samsonite suitcase. It was a rough wooden cross. He carried it for me. For my sin. My stupidity, my rebellion, and my iniquity. You see, this friend of mine, this king, has stood by me time and time and time again and picked up the pieces when I finally come to my senses. He's carried the cross to pay for my sin. He's carried the baggage of my sin. So why in the world do I think that I have the right to get mad or hurt or upset with anyone who doesn't take my advice? It's crazy in light of what the Lord has done for me. For me to say I quit, I give up, I'm mad, I'm through, only reveals my lack of understanding of what the Lord did and keeps doing in light of the decisions that I make that are not wise or right. That's why it's the wise man or woman who will say, hey, the will of the Lord be done. Because what the Lord will do for me, provision, protection, promotion, because what the Lord will do in me, peace, no more anxiety. And because what the Lord has accomplished in place of me, He's carried my baggage and died on the tree. May you today be the freest of all people in the Rogue Valley, walking around with a smile on your face and a peace in your heart, saying, hey, I've shared my thoughts, but hey, the will of the Lord be done. In Jesus' name, shall we stand?